Streaming.afa.net has now become AFA Stream, and you can find it at stream.afa.net. You see, we removed the letters ING. Our experts have determined that eliminating those three keystrokes, multiplied over hundreds of thousands of AFA Stream visits, could reduce the national debt and maybe increase the gross domestic product. AFA Stream, formerly streaming.afa.net. Improvements to the economy are purely theoretical. Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR on this Tuesday, November the 19th, 2024. I'm Tim Wildman again with Wesley Wildman. Good morning, Wesley.
And good morning.
Chris Woodward.
Good morning.
And Ray Pritchard. How you doing, Brother Ray?
Hey, I'm doing great. Tim, how you doing today?
Doing well. I'm looking at you through the video, which our listeners cannot see. They can only see the three of us here in our studio, but you are in your winter sweater, looks like.
I am. It's not winter yet here in Kansas City, but
right,
it's down into the 40s this morning and going down into the 30s tonight. So summer's long gone and fall is fading and winter is coming right around the corner.
That sounds like a country song going on right there. Huh?
Fall is fading.
Winter's coming around the corner. Fall is fading. So how long you had that particular sweater you got on right there?
About 4 days.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Yeah.
Marlene decided I needed to get spiffed up a little bit.
Oh, okay. Know?
And so she ordered a couple of sweaters, and this is like the first or second time I've worn this one. But it kind of just,
You call that Argyle? Peppy. You call that Argyle?
I'm going with that Argyle.
I think that's a thing.
I think it's on socks. Argyle is on socks.
But anyway, it's closed.
Well, Ray, let me ask you this.
Yes, sir.
Have you ventured, or have you been so brave to order your clothes off the line, or you just get Marlene to do it for you? Could I refuse to do it?
Look, I have tried. It has never worked.
Yes.
It has never worked. And for whatever reason, Wesley, it always works when Marlene does it. Mm. It never works when I do it.
What are y'all talking about?
The idea of purchasing clothes or shoes online only to get them in and go,
I know.
Needed a half size bigger, or I needed to go down a little small, and then you have to put it back in the box.
No, I go to the print label. I go to the shoe store. I'm going to the shoe store and trying on shoes.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I don't.
But people purchase clothes online all the time, and for them, I've seen Chelsea, my wife. She has no check in her. She has no problems.
Inhibitions?
No. She'll get it, and it's not a sigh for her to go return it back in the box and do it all over again and wait another 3 or 4 days. And I'm going, does that bother you? No,
right.
Just do it.
I hit the jackpot because my wife is from she has a retail background.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you buy your clothes online?
She has bought me several things before. That we get in the mail, and then I try them on and most
I tell you what, the UPS store, they're like magic.
That's what I'm saying.
Huh?
Yeah. Oh,
you walk in there with your little sticker, whatever you call it, the scan, the code, not a sticker, but
it's a return label.
The QR code.
The QR code. You walk in there. Yeah, I'm in, and if nobody's in there, you're in there less than 60 seconds. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about to return stuff.
And the private sector can do wonders, let me tell you.
Return stuff. Anyway. Well, may your Christmas be filled with no returns, ladies and gentlemen.
That's 36 days.
Wow.
Good Christmas right now.
I'll look it up.
Anyway, all right, what's your first story, Chris?
Well, as we speak, Republicans are going after FEMA for something we've discussed for well over a week now. For about a week, 10 days, we've heard stories about how FEMA was skipping over hurricane victims' homes in Florida based on the fact that they had Trump signs or yard signs out there. Representative James Comer, a Republican from Kentucky, says it actually goes beyond just Trump homes, but affluent homes or affluent neighborhoods. And I've got some audio here from Comer. We can play clip 2.
It appears that this is a pattern. a pattern of misbehavior by FEMA employees who were instructed, do not help people in affluent neighborhoods, do not help people with Trump signs in their yards or Trump flags or anything that would give the impression that they were not a supporter of the Democrat machine.
Now, in their investigation of this, Fox has determined the policy to skip affluent homes or affluent neighborhoods may have been based on so-called equity policy. And I've got a little bit of audio here from a former FEMA employee by the name of Chelsea Need, who was on Fox and Friends this morning saying, why is equity even an issue here? Clip five.
Why is the word equity even in this conversation or with anything to do with FEMA in the first place? As you mentioned beforehand, we help everybody. So there isn't a buzzword or some kind of snapshot description that encapsulates that. Emergency management, as we have an old saying in emergency management, everything begins and ends at the local level. And that's actually what we're seeing. This started at the local level and has escalated all the way up to DC. And mm-hmm. now it's going to come back eventually down at the local level to where it should have been in the first place, which was helping everybody within those disaster areas.
Yeah, I know
regardless
that.
Regardless of flags or signs.
All right, so I got a question. Mm-hmm. The last I read on this story, it was one person that made a call and everyone else followed suit because she was in charge. One person at FEMA
yes.
who was in charge, and she has since been fired. Mm-hmm. What's allowing this story to continue?
The fact that Republicans are going to have a hearing about this, we played the clip from Congressman Comer there. He's the chairman of the oversight hearing. And at 1 o'clock central today, FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell is going to be testifying at a hearing about this very topic.
So is it possible that this is beyond one person?
I would think so.
Okay.
In a clip we have not played, and we don't have to, Chelsea Need, the lady we just heard from a moment ago, the former FEMA employee, she is of the opinion that all of this is a Biden FEMA policy. We weren't doing these kinds of things when I worked for Trump or the years before he entered office.
Well, and a problem that I'm reading right here, too, is that the lady's last name was Coates, the one that was fired. Isn't that right?
I believe so.
Yeah, Coates. Well, what I'm reading here is that now, in some ways, she's turning on FEMA. She's saying, look, they've told me what to do. They told me to do this. This is their policy. I'm just implementing it. And so you're going to have – I think now you're going to have a war within. So you're going to – I wonder if there'll be more people.
A war within FEMA?
A war within FEMA.
Woo. And it's like a movie.
Yeah.
With well, Tom Cruise.
It would be.
A war within FEMA.
It'd be interesting to see
if – the theaters near you.
If more people come out from FEMA saying, yeah, you know – don't get mad at her. Don't fire her. She's just doing what we were told from the top down.
What do you think about all this, Ray?
Well, is it credible to believe that this one woman went rogue? Because to say, in a time of disaster, right, which is what they are there for, in a time of terrible devastation, is it believable to say this one woman went rogue and said, skip those homes that may have Trump signs and don't go into the affluent areas? That's not credible to me at all.
All right.
I think, Wesley, what you're saying is exactly right, that that we need to lift up this rock and let all the roaches crawl out from under it. I think we're going to find out that there was somebody up above this woman who... You know, I could imagine, Wesley, this may not be a written policy, but a spoken policy where
right,
somebody
yep,
said
yep.
to her, we're not going to put this in writing, but you can skip the homes with Trump signs. Whatever the truth is here, it needs to come out.
Well, now, they did do it in writing and text form, but I think what you're implying is like a policy form, right?
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not going to be in the handbook.
Right.
Right.
All right. Right. Turn to page 47 on your handbook. Here, people, welcome to FEMA orientation.
We joke like that, but you know, years ago, there were under the Obama administration, they did use the DOJ and other places to put hate groups, and then they listed us in
yeah.
there. So there, I mean, that's not too funny, but
right.
Not
right.
too far fetched.
Okay, before we hit the field today, just
that's
remember
right.
we're not Trump. Helping any Trump people
or fluent.
Huh?
Well, then now they're
fluent, the rich people. You think they're rich? You don't have to help them.
They were going to make discrimination great again.
Yeah. Anyway, yes. Yeah, I know, right?
Wow,
well played.
They got caught, and listen, this is the kind of stuff that you go, surely that can't happen,
right? Mm-hmm.
And the more the lefties took over the federal government, the more that kind of thing was happening and going to happen, as unbelievable as it seems. And so, listen, I don't know about all the qualifications for all these people that Trump is putting in his administration. Personally, I just say he won the election. He gets to pick. Okay. But all these folks that he's put into place, I'm making a point connected to our story here, that Trump puts in to place in his cabinet, for example, they are going to be the antithesis what we've just described. They're going to fire some people. They're going to fire the wokies and the DEI, the people who are pushed in this far left nuttiness. That is one of the reasons the Democrats lost so bad a week back Tuesday, is because in this poll after poll is showing this, even Democrats, some Democrats are saying it out loud. Bill Maher, he's a liberal. Do you see that, Ray?
Yeah.
He said our side lost because they kept talking about this crazy left wing nutty stuff. Go ahead, Ray.
Well, look, America decisively rejected the woke craziness on November the 5th. And not everybody on the other side realizes it yet, but some of their smarter people, like Bill Maher, I mean, he's smart enough to at least understand which way the wind is blowing, that the American people have rejected as a policy woke craziness.
What's going to happen now, and this is the reason the left is going to, they're going to get in, they're depressed right now, but they're probably going to get back in fighting mode, is because if they could do anything to stop it, with these people that Trump has appointed, I'm thinking of Pete Hegseth, for example, who's going to be Secretary of Defense if he's confirmed. First thing he's going to do is go through and get rid of all the
transgender and military gays.
All that stuff's gone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's gone. He said he wants to revert basically to 1999.
Yes.
Yeah. DOD, and that's going to happen. What I'm saying is that's going to happen across the board
and
in all the agencies once Trump's people get into place.
And what the opponents are going to have a hard time arguing is the benefits that everyone's going to have when these new policies are put in place. For example, when FEMA reacts on an orderly process of going from house to house based on the destruction, and they operate accordingly, everybody benefits. But right now, when they're selective in who they choose, people get mad. And so when you revert back to, like Hegseth went on doing 1999, when you revert back to just, in this case, in the FEMA's case, just helping people, or in 1999, as far as military goes, when you just operate under protecting the borders, protecting the country, having the strongest, best military possible, when you revert back to those things and you get all the other distractions out, people benefit from that, and it's a good thing. So it's going to be a hard time. It'd be hard to, once you see the results of what they're wanting to implement over time, it'll be hard to be against it.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Chris, Wesley, and also Ray is with us today. Frank Turek joins us now. Frank is host of Cross Examined, heard Saturdays at 9 a.m. Central Time, right here on American Family Radio, the program Cross Examined with Dr. Frank Turek. And we play it also Sunday afternoons at 4 o'clock Central Time right here on AFR. How you doing, Frank?
I'm doing great, Tim. Hey, I noticed the Babylon Bee has a headline about Pete Hegseth. And here's the headline. It has a picture of him, and it says, "Appalling. New Trump appointee has zero experience being a useless government bureaucrat."
Oh, that's funny.
Perfect.
That's funny. Hey, what do you I know we'll talk about a different topic, but just generally speaking, what do you think about these Trump appointments? He just doesn't care, does he?
I think he has to go for broke, because this is an opportunity to reset things. And I don't have any problem with any of his appointees, you know. But it is a legitimate function of the Senate to advise and consent.
To have hearings.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And he may get a couple of them through with a recess appointment, which would basically put them in office for 2 years. Most of these people don't stay in for 4 years anyway. So
Right. It
might be he wants to get Gates in there for just a couple of years and then somebody else will take over. Who knows? We'll see. He gets it right, as you just said, to appoint whom he wants to appoint. And the American people have sent him there to do a job. And so these are the people they knew would come with him. So yeah. I don't see what the problem is.
Yeah, I think the first thing too he's going to do is stop the illegal immigration over our border. He's going to shut that down day one. And who was it I saw yesterday talking about one of the stupidest things Biden and Harris did was to get rid of Trump's Remain in Mexico policy. But somebody was telling me that.
Yeah, that was also a sort of a COVID policy as well. You need to stay in Mexico until we figure out whether you truly qualify for asylum. And after they got rid of that,
the floodgates opened.
Just went nuts.
Then Biden and Harris said, "No, we're going to dump everything Trump did to stop illegal immigration. We're just going to open up and say y'all come." And guess what they did?
Welcome a surge.
From around the world, they came, and that's one of the reasons that Harris lost the election, is because of their stupid policy of opening the floodgates to illegal immigrants. I read yesterday where 200,000 are in New York. That was stunning.
And Mayor Adams isn't happy about that. He said it's cost us billions of dollars, and the feds gave us like $200 million.
Right. That may be why he was indicted.
Probably. Yeah.
He was criticizing the Biden administration. Mm. So he gets, they can indiscriminately indict.
That's right.
Democrats, Republicans, doesn't matter. If you criticize us, we're coming after you. I don't know that. I'm just
the name of inclusion.
All right. So, Frank, holiday season is upon us. Thanksgiving, Christmas is going to be here. We're going to be having family dinners, gatherings, and so forth. The topic for you today is how to advance the gospel of Christ at holiday dinners.
Well, first of all, if they're Trump supporters, do not feed them.
That's right. That's it. Well played. I figured you had something like that up your sleeve.
Oh, that's funny.
Starve them out, man. Yeah. Starve them out.
Yeah. Don't invite them. Yeah. No inclusion here.
That's right.
So, all right. Other than keeping Trump, well, that's going to mean then my whole family won't even have Christmas then. Cause if we don't invite Trump people,
Trump voters, nobody
comes.
This is off tongue in cheek about what FEMA's been doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So go ahead. In all seriousness, there is a time where people gather and
good to see people, family that you don't otherwise see.
Go ahead.
That's right. Well, we're going to have a whole show on this next week. But let me just give you a few things. First of all, I think we ought to pray before the dinner to make sure that that God gives us opportunities to speak in a way that can advance the gospel. And when I say advance the gospel, I don't think you have to get people to the foot of the cross with every conversation. If you try that, it might work. But if you try that, you probably won't want to do it because you'll say it's just too hard to get people to the foot of the cross in every conversation. We always want to harvest when, in fact, maybe we ought to just consider gardening. If we can just, say, get people to consider the fact that truth exists, you know, it's not my truth or your truth, but the truth. That's progress, right? Or just get them to believe that there is a higher power out there. That's progress. Or get them to believe there is a real right and wrong by saying, hey, you know, you seem to feel really strongly about certain moral issues. Do you think those are really true, objective moral issues, or are they just a matter of opinion?
Pass the cranberry sauce.
Yeah, that's right. So I don't think you have to, you know, pray the sinner's prayer with people to do evangelism.
Right.
Just move them toward Christianity, or at least away from the worldview they believe now. So pray you have opportunities to do that. And then also offer to do the prayer at the meal, because even families that don't normally pray at a meal over Thanksgiving, typically they will. And when you pray, insert the gospel in the prayer. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to interrupt the prayer. Nobody's going to say, hey, you can't say that.
Right. So you got a captive audience and you
that's
want,
right.
Okay. Just you want to browbeat them basically with your prayer.
That's yeah. right.
Okay.
And,
I got you.
And say,
because they can't if, resist. What are they supposed to do?
Only if you're a Trump supporter. Only if you're a Trump
that's right,
supporter.
Trump, yeah.
Are we going to pray for you? No.
Listen, in all seriousness, I think it's a great idea that Frank has here that we use the opportunities that we have, Ray, to share the gospel of Christ.
I got a question for you, Frank. What's one or two things that you don't do? Or is there two? Are there anything that come to mind that you like try to avoid this?
Well,
or not necessarily.
It depends on if you know where they stand. On the political issues, if they're so far on the other side, if they have Trump derangement syndrome, you don't even want to bring politics up, right?
Sure.
Because it's not going to go well. You don't reason with people who are so emotional they can't respond
to reason. They'll go full into Blair on you.
That's a good point.
You know what I'm saying? The head's spinning around.
That's a good point.
So why even go there? Yeah, why even go there? I mean, the election's over at this point, and things are probably pretty raw at this point. So there's no sense talking about that at this point. You just want to get people to consider the fact that there is a God, you are not him, and we're all sinners, and we need a Savior. Now, how much of that you can do over dinner, I don't know, but you can also ask a lot of questions. Like, when people say things, you don't have to refute what they say. They have to support what they say. So if they say, the Bible's been changed throughout the centuries, you know, you somehow get off on that, say, what do you mean by that? Mm-hmm. Don't go into a dissertation as to why that's not true. Ask them for evidence. First of all, ask them to clarify, what do you mean by that? And then ask them for evidence for their position. Like, say, well, what evidence do you have for that position? And see what they say. Yeah. Most of the time, people, they don't have evidence for their position. Mm-hmm. They just have heard a slogan. And they like the slogan, but if you ask them for evidence for the slogan, they can't bring any evidence because they don't have evidence.
Right.
They just heard something they like.
Okay, I got a question, Frank. To go back to the political, because everything you said is, to me, great wisdom to go into a Thanksgiving Christmas situation and try to plant some gospel seeds and let God bring the harvest. But what do we do, Frank? If you got family members or friends around the table, people you love and care for, but who are not just on the other side of the political divide, but they have come loaded for bear. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've seen on the internet, on Twitter and the others, you know, do not, you know, cut your Trump supporting friends off. Don't go, you know, looking for a fight. So what do you do at a moment when we're supposed to be there giving thanks to God or celebrating the birth of Jesus and somebody comes after you personally because they know where you stand? I think that actually, it's not an unlikely scenario for some of us. How do we respond?
I think what Jesus said about turning the other cheek when it came to insults, that's what you do. You just turn the other cheek, say, hey, I'm sorry you feel that way. Maybe we could talk about it, you know, and see why you think that. I'd love to hear your position on it. Why do you think...
Or you could go with you're wrong, get out of my house. I mean,
yeah.
I'm just saying that's an option. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's definitely on the table.
Yeah. No, I'm listen, I think what the overall theme here is to be sensitive to the situation. And it is about the only time, and maybe another couple of times of the year, where you might gather with people who aren't necessarily you're connected with in one way or another, family, friends, but friends of a friend, but you're not necessarily on the same page.
The biggest takeaway for me was what Frank said at the beginning, is to be prayed up and to be aware that you have opportunities. And that's a way of looking at opportunities to plant seeds.
And you could, you know, if they really get...
I have a hard time believing you anything you're about to say.
If they really get hostile, I would say get up and do the Trump dance.
Yeah, that'll work.
Now, what you can do here, Tim, and say, you could just, if you want to defuse it, you just say, now look, we're all adults here.
That's right.
Mr.
That's right.
Poopy Pants.
Right. We're all adults here.
Yeah. Okay, all right, Ray. I mean, excuse me, Frank. We'll see you this weekend.
All right.
All right. Take care.
Sounds great. God bless you guys. See you.
That's Dr. Frank Turek with the Cross Examine Show. And it's heard Saturdays at 9 in the morning. It's an excellent show. You want to make sure you tune in for that right here on AFR. We'll be back momentarily.
If we learned anything from this election, it's how important it is for us to fight, fight, fight. We also learned how desperately the left wants to fight to take babies' lives, which is why every day Preborn Ministries fights for the babies. Preborn's network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, fighting for mothers deciding between the life and death of their child. Preborn welcomes these women with God's love and offers them a free ultrasound to introduce their precious baby and hear the beautiful heartbeat. This amazing encounter gives her baby a fighting chance, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. Would you join Preborn in the fight for life? One ultrasound is just $28, and $140 will sponsor five ultrasounds. And now, through a match, your gift is doubled. Babies are worth fighting for. To donate, dial #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible, and Preborn has a 4-star charity rating. Fight, fight, fight for the babies.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
What was it you showing me right there on the video, Wesley? People may want to check that out. It's a
Macarena Donald Trump remix. By Bo Marcus. I don't know Bo Marcus or what all he's done before now, but he's going popular. He's got.
Is it viral? What? It's a video, Ray, of Trump.
Doing the Macarena.
Yeah, dancing. Okay,
I like it already.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny. It's
a remix of the Macarena.
Yeah. Anyway.
It's pretty funny.
What's happening right now is that a lot of the NFL players and NHL players are doing
The Trump dance.
The Trump dance. In the end zone or on the hockey ice.
This song goes hand in hand with the dance.
Yeah, it's funny. All right, you're listening to today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Wesley, Chris, and Ray. And you know, it's Operation Christmas Child is going on right now, and we wanted to talk to somebody that had been personally impacted somewhere in the world by the generosity of Christians who make the shoeboxes and then send them around the world. And so we have on the phone with us Alex. I'll let Alex pronounce his last name. Hey, Alex, this is Tim. How you doing?
Good, Tim. Thank you so much for having me this morning.
What's your last name?
My last name is Senjimana, Alex Senjimana, born and raised in Rwanda, East Africa.
Okay. Well, welcome to our program.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Are you joining us from the U.S. or are you in Rwanda?
I currently live in Boone, North Carolina, and where we're getting ready for the busy season of Operation Christmas Child.
Tell us your story.
Yeah, it is such a joy to share how the ministry of Operation Christmas Child made a difference in my life. I was born and raised in Rwanda at a time when tribal unrest was at its greatest. But through that turmoil and that tribal unrest, God was always with me, protecting me. Unfortunately, when the hatred started in the country of Rwanda back 30 years ago, hatred was created, and that hatred resulted into a genocide that would take a million lives, and over 40,000 orphans were left in the country. During this time, as a little boy, 6 years old, my grandmother and one of my uncles were among the people who were killed during this genocide against the Tutsi tribe. And me and my brother and my sister would find ourselves running from place to place, from family to family. But along the way, God was doing so many miracles to protect us. For example, when men's weapons didn't work, and then another moment when I would fall and a bullet would miss my head by an inch. Miracles after miracles. But it was during this time that I had, you know, lost all hope, running for my life, that after the genocide, I was put in an orphanage. And while I was in this orphanage, this is 1995, the genocide took place for 3 months in 1994. In July, when it ended, one of the first organizations that responded to what was happening was Samaritan's Purse. And Samaritan's Purse is an international evangelistic organization that responds to different disasters around the country and around the world. So they responded, and while they were helping people physically, a year later, they brought Operation Christmas Child shoeboxes to our orphanage. And Tim, that's when for the very first time in my life, I got to receive a gift, and it was an Operation Christmas Child shoebox gift.
How old were you again?
I was 7 years old when I got to open that shoebox gift. And all of us kids in that orphanage were so excited. We were told to line up in the yard. So we lined up, and they hand out the gifts, and then they say, don't open your gifts until all of them have been handed out. So some of us had to hold our present for about 5 minutes.
Oh.
Such a long time for a seven-year-old. But we were excited, screaming of excitement.
When you opened the box, I got a question for you. When you opened the box, what was the first thing that you pulled out, and then what's one thing that you used the most?
Yeah, one of the first items that I pulled out was a little bouncy ball and a hair comb. A hair comb was my favorite item that I kept the longest, and that was very special.
Again, this was what you were 7 years old, and we're talking '90s, the 1990s.
Mm-hmm, 1994.
Yeah. So, and you're at an orphanage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all the children receive these shoeboxes. Were the shoebox that you received? Did you know what country it was from?
Yeah, when we got to receive the Operation Christmas Child shoeboxes, the orphanage director shared with us that these shoeboxes were coming from the United States. And we lined up in the yard, and it was our first time, so it was so special. For a seven-year-old lost all hope, and all of us, 250 of us, lining up. And as they told us to hold our shoeboxes, we're so excited. And they were telling us this gift from the United States, and it was so special. I'll never forget that day. But the impact that the shoebox gift had on our lives was that the orphanage director used that opportunity to share with us about Jesus Christ. And the seed of the gospel was planted in my life. Even though I had lost everything and I lost all hope, God reminded me that someone out there was thinking about me.
Wow.
And I was not forgotten.
You know, go ahead.
Right, go ahead, and then Wesley, go ahead.
Alex, this is an amazing story of God's grace. Now, you're on the other side, so to speak. Now you are a part of Samaritan's Purse, and you're part of the Operation Christmas Child Ministry, which goes to children all over the world.
Yeah.
How in the world did you get from that seven-year-old boy to doing what you're doing today with Samaritan's Purse?
Yeah. After receiving the Operation Christmas Child shoebox gift, the seed of the gospel was planted, and that's when my life changed. A year later, I joined the choir, and I left Rwanda. I was in Uganda, and while I was in Uganda, this is when I got to be discipled. Many people, mentors, came in my life to challenge me, to help to disciple me. So then I came to the United States and traveled for 2.5 years. I would meet a family, and in 2003, I got adopted into a family in the United States, and God sent me to the coldest part of the country, Minnesota, and I grew up in Minnesota going to high school, but I packed shoeboxes in high school with my friends, and we would pack shoeboxes every year, and then in 2013, I moved to North Carolina to serve with Operation Christmas Child because I get the privilege of sharing the experience of how a shoebox gift is being used. Operation Christmas Child partnering with the local church worldwide to share God's love in a very tangible way using the shoebox gift. Then
Alex, if I could, I want to ask a follow-up question to that, because I noted, I looked over your bio, and it said there's one, the number of incredible things here, but one really caught my eye. It says that while in Rwanda in 2013 distributing shoeboxes, you also had a chance to visit in prison the man responsible for taking your uncle's life. Tell us about that moment and tell us why you did that.
Yeah. After receiving the shoebox gift and a seed of the gospel being planted in my life and learning about how much God loved me and having people to point me to the gospel, I realized that I would never have peace, because I was so angry for many years, living in bitterness of anger towards the people who killed my family. And when I got discipled and I realized I would never have peace, so I started to pray. Actually, one of my mentors asked me this question. She said, what would happen if you saw the person who's caused you pain? And I remember thinking, I would do exactly the same thing. They killed my grandmother and my uncle in front of me, and I would definitely do the same. And that scared me, that I was thinking of doing exactly the same thing. So I prayed for over 12 years, and I wanted to be part of the initiative that the government of Rwanda was putting together, bringing reconciliation among the people who killed and the victims. And so I prayed for many years, and I pursued those opportunities to do that. But twice I did, and didn't happen. So in 2013, I had the privilege of traveling to Rwanda with Operation Christmas Child to deliver shoeboxes in the same orphanage that I grew up in. And it was on that trip that actually I got to go to the prison, and I found out that the guy who killed my grandmother fled, but the guy who killed my uncle was still there. And it was divine appointment of how God opened doors for us to be able to meet the person and be able to share with him that God loves him as well. No matter what he's done, if he prays to God for forgiveness, he can be forgiven. And for me, that was a special moment, hard moment, but special to hear the other side of the story and be reminded that he and I are loved the same. And that's the gospel I was missing out in my bitterness and my anger. So I share that to give God the glory for what he's done and continues to do, bringing reconciliation and healing people. And my journey started when I got to receive that Operation Christmas Child Shoebox gift that planted that seed of the gospel when I was 7 years old in 1995, living in an orphanage. And this is the same message that each and every shoebox gift that is packed sends to a child around the world in partnership with the local church. And thank you. I'm passionate. I love what God is doing, and I'm grateful that he granted me that opportunity to experience my own personal healing. And it's exciting to be able to share so that one more shoebox gift can send that gospel message to another child.
You've heard how impactful it was for Alex to receive his shoebox. And with that said, we want to remind you that this week and through the 25th, so began yesterday, November 18th, through November 25th, is National Collection Week. It's National Collection Week, so it may have snuck up on some of us, but you still have several days left to turn in your shoebox. You can go to SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. We also have the link up on our AFR.net website, and we can post it other places as well. That's SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. There, all the information, including where you have a drop box near you. There's 4,700 locations nationwide. Many, many local churches are drop box stations, so you can go check out more information on that. There is some things you're going to want to know about what you can and can't put in the shoebox, and all that information is there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, listen, thank you, Alex, for being on with us, and what a wonderful story. I mean, it was sad in many respects, but there was also
redemptive.
Redemptive and hopeful in other ways. And so, by the way, welcome to the U.S. How long have you been here?
I've been here for about 20, coming to 21 years now.
Your accent hadn't changed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just kidding.
But neither is mine.
That's right.
What you grow up with.
Yeah,
that's
we love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's my Minnesotan accent coming out.
There you go. That's a good one. All right, Alex, take care. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Alex grew up in Rwanda. You've been to Africa, right?
Yeah, I've been to Uganda, which is next door to Rwanda. A lot of the A lot of the refugees from what happened 30 years ago came into, some to Kenya, some to Uganda. What a story. A story of redemption and of reconciliation and forgiveness. And, you know, I don't suppose we need to say anything except about Operation Christmas Child. We're behind it 100%.
That's right.
We believe in this ministry.
What a great idea. So simple. Yeah. Yet reaches people, millions of people every year around the world.
You know, it's not always we get to see the direct impact instantaneously or even within weeks of a ministry opportunity that we get involved in or, you know, participate in. But this is one of them. This is one of those where you get to see, but we get to see videos of it, but people get to personally see the firsthand impact of delivering the shoeboxes and kids open.
And, you know, if you got kids, right, or grandkids, that, you know, there's, you know, if you got little children, how can they help reach other people for Christ?
Right here.
Fill in that shoebox. Yeah. That's, you can talk about what it means and why you're doing it and pray for whoever's going to receive it.
I do want to point our listeners to our Today's Issues Facebook page because we have the Frequently Asked Questions or FAQ page, which includes the dates and deadlines when you can drop off shoeboxes. That's one thing on our Facebook page. We also have the story that Alex just shared in longer written form. So do check that out and get more from him on what he just shared.
Yeah, what a story. Came to the U.S., moved to Minnesota. Lived in Minnesota, he said, and then now lives in Boone, or at least he's in Boone, North Carolina. That Boone is the international headquarters for
right
Operation Christmas Child, right?
It is.
Right, right. That's their biggest distribution center is there in Boone.
I'd like to go see that sometime. I know we've had a couple of our staff go see that. You know, when it's at its max right now, you know, when they're taking these boxes in from across the country and then distributing them around the world.
It's an enormous operation, enormous.
Yeah.
And, well, what a simple way that ground level way people can get involved in reaching children in places like an orphanage in Rwanda.
Yeah. And to Samaritan's Purse's credit, I mean, they're about 2 hours-ish from Asheville, where they've been helping people with the flooding from the hurricane, and they're still doing this. They are a well-run, well-oiled machine there that keeps on ticking.
Very organized.
All right, next story, Chris.
All right. There is a Democrat from Massachusetts by the name of Seth Moulton. He's a representative, and he's one of the few Democrats that actually thinks it is wrong for males to compete in female sports. A lot of Republicans have long argued that we shouldn't have males in female sports, but it's rare that we have somebody from across the aisle join them in that criticism. But Representative Seth Moulton of Massachusetts is one rare example there. And he's been taking a lot of heat. He's been on Fox a lot, too, talking about the problems with males and female sports. Here's one of the latest sound bites of Democrat Representative Seth Moulton, clip 10.
Well, look, I'm not afraid of protests. I mean, people protest out in front of my office all the time because they think I'm too pro-Israel, for example. And so protests are okay. They're part of freedom of speech. But you're absolutely right. We just need to be willing to talk about these contentious issues. I'm not anti-trans either. In fact, I have a strong record of supporting trans people, including trans kids. And this isn't about trans kids either. That's another criticism I hear. Look, my kids are young. They play on co-ed soccer teams, just like I did when I was their age, too. But when they get older, when we're talking about competitive sports, you know, when people are a lot bigger, it's reasonable to have restrictions. That's why the NCAA has restrictions. That's why the Olympics have restrictions. And yet, for some reason, because of some orthodox litmus test in our party, we're not even supposed to entertain the idea.
You know, I have said this before, and I'll say it again. Democrats are a big reason why we have Title IX in the first place, and this is one bit of evidence on why the Democratic Party that Tim grew up with is not the Democratic Party of today, because they're clearly ignoring what they did for women 50-plus years ago.
Yeah, now who was that fellow we just heard?
Democrat Representative Seth Moulton from Massachusetts.
Okay. And he's still very liberal, you could tell by his comments, but he said he draws a line at, I would assume he's talking about after puberty, or at least, you know, junior high.
Right.
When the distinctions between male and female become very pronounced in terms of their physical strength. And what he was saying, Wesley, was basically this is one of the reasons Democrats lost is because we're trying to force feed the American people something they know is fundamentally unfair.
That's exactly right. And you're seeing a trend of this, as you mentioned, beyond just red states or just beyond Republicans and people outside that may have been in the middle or may even be liberal in other issues are saying this is too far. I don't think this goes much further than I don't know how much more they could potentially push this for two reasons. One, you're the general public, the majority of the public is against it. Number two, you're getting to see a taste in small dosages of what this looks like in real life with the injuries of women going up against men in sports as well. So I don't know if it could go. I feel like we're kind of peaked out on what they can, on what areas they can implement this or try to put this in. I don't see this going much further. It may stall out for a little bit, but I kind of see this going backwards the other way.
Right.
You know, we had Riley Gaines on the program several months ago. She is such a good proponent of what you might call old-fashioned common sense, right? You don't mutilate children. You don't do that. If somebody's 24 and they make some decision, we may disagree with it. We may think it's sad and even regrettable and evil, in fact. But we understand when you're 24, you make some decision and then you have to live with the consequences. But you don't touch the kids. You don't touch the kids.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You just don't touch them. And get the boys off of the girls' volleyball team.
Right.
Right. Just get them.
And out of locker rooms, too.
And also.
Out of locker rooms, yeah.
Yeah. In addition to the pushing the transgendered issue, that is, we're supposed to all pretend like boys are girls because they say they are, and that doesn't work. Wesley, you're right. When you're talking about, okay, you're going to say the boy can play on the girl sports team as long as he calls himself a girl. And that includes not only getting out on the soccer field, for example, or on the basketball court or volleyball, whatever the case may be, but also you get to go to the showers and the changing area.
Right.
And ride in the van. There's so many invasive places that boys don't need to be where girls are gathered, you know, but if the boy says he's a girl, he gets to go there. And Riley Gaines talked about how that was uncomfortable. So the good news is there's been a total backlash to this. Yep. People who have common sense don't like being called transphobes or haters or bigots, and that's been turned around for the better now that with the election results. Go ahead.
One thing that I've mentioned before is that if you're an adult, so is it 18 and up? For 18 and up, if transgender people are so adamant about having to be able, wanting the ability to compete in sports, they just have a third category.
Right.
Transgender people.
Right, yeah, you could do that.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know, but they don't want to do that. But
I know they don't. Yeah.
And how come if how come you never see a girl?
Knock on that. Not
a girl
who
said. How come you say you never see a girl who says, I'm a boy, make it to the NBA?
That's right. Yep.
Because it only proves what we all know to be true, that boys and girls are physiologically different. We all know this is like, duh.
Bone density, muscle mass.
Heart. Yeah. All right. So that's good news. And also, what's big news is, too, folks, remember I told you about the Title IX federal government funds through something called Title IX. And that's when Biden and Harris said, if you're a state and you're going to get federal dollars through Title IX, which was supposed to support women's athletics, right? Women's
equal spaces and opportunities in sports.
Anyway,
prohibit sex discrimination in educational programs and activities that receive federal funding.
Not just sports.
Correct.
But anyway, so the federal government doles out this money to all the states. Well, Biden and Harris said, you know what, states? if you don't let boys play girls sports, we're not giving you any of the money that you would otherwise get. So basically they were threatening them.
And Title IX is supposed to be
for advanced women. Women's sports.
Even when there's not necessarily a huge fan base for it, they want to give them an opportunity to at least compete in some sports for women specifically, and now men are taking.
But whoever takes over the HHS,
it's RFK is who Trump wants in there. HHS. Department of Ed is up in the air at the moment.
Okay, that's cabinet-level position.
It is.
But he'll reverse that. The Trump administration, through RFK, they'll reverse that, what I just said, that Biden and Harris were trying to do, which is another good news as a result of the election a week ago Tuesday. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Chris, we got about a minute and a half or so.
Yes. I'll go around the room. Early Friday trivia. What famous event in American history happened on this day in 1863?
Thanksgiving.
Gettysburg Address.
Okay, that's right? One guess.
That's the Civil War.
Civil War.
Civil War period. You talking about what took place?
Yeah, what took place? What happened on this day in
1863? Okay, it's a good guess, but that Civil War, Gettysburg Address would have been at least 1965 because that's when the war ended. I mean, 1865, rather. I'm going to...
I'll let y'all be the silly ones. I'm not saying anything.
It may have something to do with the Civil War. It would probably have something to do.
Am I right? You're both right. It was during the Civil War, obviously, 1861 to 1865. Ray hit it right. U.S. President Abraham Lincoln, on this day in history, delivered the brief but renowned Gettysburg Address at the dedication of the National Cemetery in Pennsylvania during the American Civil War. That is from Britannica, which is an encyclopedia people still consult for information.
So he delivered the Gettysburg Address before the war was over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
1863.
Yeah.
All right, Ray. I stand corrected.
Battle was in July of 1863 and November. He came to dedicate the National Cemetery.
Did. 47 years ago, Ray was hitting the books.
Anyway, well, that's a good trivia question, Ray. Way to go there with the answer. I usually don't strike out on
trivia.
History.
Yeah, history trivia.
Especially American history trivia. I don't know if I struck out right there. I think I fouled a couple balls off.
Yeah.
You're not back in the dugout.
You knew it was Civil War.
Yeah, you're not back in
the dugout. I was Civil War, so I fouled the balls off. I'm ready for the...
You're Civil War, right?
Okay, yes. All right, we're going to return momentarily with more of Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Steve Paisley-Jordahl will join us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.